You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 120 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Delighted to say we've been joined, I think, for his hat-trick appearance on the show today, and that's Nottinghamshire and England cricketer Jake Ball. Jake, how is the injury recovery going?
Yeah, it's going really well, actually. It's been a long one, bit of a frustrating one, but starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel now, so it's getting to the exciting stage of it where I can start bowling and batting, and I'm doing a lot more physical-based stuff, so... It's been a long one, but hopefully now we're getting towards the back end of it now.
Great to hear, mate. Anyway. Great to hear. Dude, we can't get you on and not ask you about obviously your thoughts on the Ashes. I stayed up to watch some bits of it, what it was worth. But what was your thoughts?
I stayed up to watch the first few, and I kept getting asked before it. I did a few like lunches and stuff before, and they're like saying, "What do you think?" And I said, "The first test is so key. If you let them get on top, it could be a whitewash. If we come out with it with a draw, then that would be a good result to take some confidence. But I just think we just lost so much confidence in that first test. We didn't go into it without any confidence really, because we missed a lot of our warm-up games through the weather. Obviously,
yeah.
You have to isolate. I had that last year when I went to play in the Big Bash. You know, you don't realise how much 14 days in a hotel room takes out of you. It's like I came out of it and I was like, I felt so sluggish. It took me 2 or 3 weeks to get up to pace, and by that time you could have played 2 or 3 games. So it's like it wasn't ideal preparation, but I don't think that's an excuse. But I think they missed the trick in the first test, not playing one of Stuart Broad or Jimmy Anderson, because I think that was such a big test for the series.
Yeah, and the experience those boys have got in it. I know, obviously, our record over there isn't exactly stellar, but when we have done well over there, you are right. We've normally done or been really competitive in that first test, haven't we?
Yeah.
And that's always the key. You are right, yeah.
Yeah, their media and their fans are very, very fickle. When they're doing well, they get behind them and support them really well. But also, on the other side, when they aren't doing as well, then they really get on their back as well. So that's why I said if we can put some doubts into the fans and media over there, then they do get stuck into their players quite quickly. So, that was disappointing when I saw the first team. I mean, it was still a good side, but I think you need the people who have had experience to play over there, because it does require something a little bit different playing over there.
Yeah, the media can be summed up by how smug they're smug when they're winning. It's like Warner, and it can be summed up in just basically Warner as a player, isn't it? He's smug when he's winning. When he's losing, he's a sore loser, isn't he? So
But unfortunately, we got on the wrong side of it, didn't we? So
what about the run situation? I mean, I obviously kept abreast of most of it, and I think the openers struggled, didn't they? And then obviously Root was having to come in and obviously try and salvage more than he should have done. But I think obviously we were trying some new opening partnerships. I think, do you think that's an area we really need to focus on? I don't think we barely scored over 300, did we, in most innings, really?
No, I don't know. I think that's part of the problem as well. We didn't really stick with one. I think my experience being out there 2 or 3 years ago is that as soon as things start going wrong, you start changing stuff too quickly. And rather than actually giving players time to adjust to the different pitches out there, the speed of the ball, because they do bowl faster. You don't experience pace like that too often playing county cricket, but you back their skill and ability to adapt over a period of a couple of games. I just don't think we gave our players enough time to adapt. Because I think we had 7 or 8 players whose it was their first Ashes, not even just their first away Ashes, but their first Ashes. So I think you just got to give them a chance to develop and grow into it and give them experience.
Yeah, massively. And especially when you look at, like, when we have done it before, that, you know, Cook was unreal, wasn't he, when he had that series where he scored a ridiculous number of runs. He got a few centuries. And I thought he was great commentating, actually, when I watched it on Sky. I thought he was brilliant. You know, he gives you a real insight into it, because obviously he's been there and played on those pitches, like you said.
Yeah. No,
I'm not sure who's more depressing to watch, the England cricket team in Australia or Everton.
I've actually had quite a depressing winter then, haven't I? watching England, and just had back surgery. I don't know how I've got through.
Oh, no, very difficult times.
You need to be having a few sessions with Pete as the resident clinical psychologist, mate, after this.
I will do. I'll stay on the line. I need a good psychologist.
Mates rates as well, yeah. Pete.
It doesn't help that our psychologist at Notts is a Villa fan. He was texting me all day yesterday.
Oh God! Yeah, last thing you need.
I'm not.
Well, that's an ideal way into the force. Need the latest instalments of the so popular that is Everton Football Club. And obviously, lost another game at Goodison Park. Duncan Ferguson's first game in charge as interim manager. And there was certainly a lift in the week, I felt. You know, well, there most definitely was. You know, after the removal of the manager and the build-up to this game, and there was a lot of flashbacks to that Chelsea game when Big Dunk took over. And obviously, it certainly gave the fan base a lift, that's for sure. I don't know what everyone thought, but I thought in the build-up to the game, maybe it's just me, but even on Friday, listening to Big Dunk, I don't think he sounded like he sounded when he took over last time. I think that he was slightly downplaying things a little bit more, slightly more subdued. Maybe it's because, I mean, he said himself he's learned from the last time being in charge, and I think he was overly emotional last time, as opposed to now maybe he's just taking a little bit more of a reserved outlook on things. But I felt he was a little bit more subdued. And I know you said to me on the phone last night, Lee, that we were all there at the game, obviously, and he wasn't announced to the crowd. Probably
no, he wanted I thought that was that strange. Yeah.
Yeah, probably wanted it that way. I felt that might have built up things a little bit more if he was announced personally. But I think maybe he said, listen, being there, done that, let's get on with the game. But I just felt it was a little bit flat and a lot different to what we saw when he was in charge last. But I've got a question, I'll bring in at this point. When you saw that team yesterday, and we always seem to go on about the start 11, don't we? And when we see the team breaking out before the game, it certainly raised a few eyebrows, didn't it? And someone rightly pointed out, if that was a certain Spanish manager who's just left the club, I'm not sure the fan base would have been too happy seeing the start 11 that we saw yesterday.
Definitely. I mean, I think the word I used when Lee and I were walking down to the ground and the team was announced was it was a bold team selection. And I think from the off, I mean, look, as a fan, there were a few calls in that starting lineup that I wouldn't have made myself. I think not just in terms of personnel, but again, we've criticised Rafa, haven't we, for persisting with a two-man midfield. And you know, arguably a two-man midfield of Decore and Gomez, you probably need someone else in there with them to get the best out of them. But on the other hand, you know, Alan apparently had COVID. I know there's been other illnesses in throughout the squad. But something had to change, didn't it? You know, something I said to Lee was, well, maybe another way of looking at it is he's trying to shake things up enough to get a response from these players. Because, you know, we've all been unhappy with Rafa's stubbornness, but the players have to take some responsibility as well. And they've been extremely poor. I mean, when we last recorded and we went through the games we've lost, I think we said something like, you know, seven out of the nine most recent losses have been catastrophes. You know, horrendous performances, you know, the likes of Watford, Wolves away, you know, the Palace game, just, you know, really inept and weak. So in a way, I can sort of understand, you know, Big Dunk bringing in the likes of Holgate, Kenny, and saying, you know, look, sorry to the lads on the bench, but I want players in the side that are going to bring that Everton DNA. And we know that Big Dunk values players that are going to fight, that are going to be committed. And I think that's what you get from some of the people that he put in the starting 11. Whether they're as technically good or reliable as, you know, some of the players on the bench, I think is a valid question for debate. But I can sort of see maybe why he shook things up in the way he did. And, you know, if we would have won the game, would we be going over the team selection in the same way? I don't know.
Well, you never would do, would you? I think when you win a game, you know, if you look at things totally different, and obviously the manager's decisions are justified. I think one player, obviously Holgate and Kenny were the two that I thought, hang on, what's going on here? But then you look at the players that were taken out of the firing line. Michael Keane's been criticised week in, week out, especially in recent weeks. And Seamus Coleman's also bore the brunt of fan unrest, I'd say, at times. You know, people understand the predicament that he's in. You know, he's probably been kept on a little bit longer than he should have been as our first choice right back. But then he doesn't bring in the right back that we signed from Rangers in Nathan Patterson. Doesn't he make the squad? Now, again, unsure whether there was illness. Some are saying there wasn't. Some are saying he just wasn't picked. Mikhailenko was there. He was in the travelling party, if you like. He stayed in the team hotel before the game. Came to the ground, got off the bus, but was obviously didn't make the squad. But then obviously one player who was left out, and I certainly, as much as I thought it might have happened if we went 4-3-3, because I think that the wide players would have been Damari Gray and Richarlison. I think that Anthony Gordon, Jake, has got to find himself really unlucky there to miss out, because obviously when he came on, he was our best player, made a real difference. But he's one player lately, isn't he, who is making a difference and is standing out in relatively poor performances.
Yeah, no, I think he is. I think what you said there about that Everton DNA, I think he epitomises that. He's that sort of player that the fans love. The fans love him because he plays for the shirt and he plays with his heart, doesn't he? I think that's certainly what I get from him. And we don't actually have a lot of that in the squad, I don't think. I don't think there's many players in that dressing room that would give everything for the badge and the team and the fans and everybody. I don't think there's many players in there. And I think that is, from my point of view, looking from a distance, that is a big problem. I think we've spent far too much money on names and players with past reputations and, you know, people that potentially might be, well, you know, we do, I don't think we buy players with the intention to the way we want to play. I think we buy players because of their name and then try and fit them into a system, which I think has been the fundamental flaw for years now. But certainly on Gordon, I think in him, we have somebody that you can't not necessarily build a team around, but build a philosophy around him, get more players in the squad like him, more players that just want to play football, don't care if we play five games back to back, we'll go out there and give everything, don't whinge, don't chuck yourself about moaning all the time and all this sort of thing. But I think what he gives is 100% every time he goes on the field, And I think that's why the fans respond to him so well.
When you consider how meticulous David Moyes was when he was signing players as well, wasn't he? I know he had to be, because obviously the funds dictated that. But, you know, one of the big things that Moyes, even now at his time at West Ham, still does it, is one of the big things he looks into beyond the football talent is what are they like as lads? Do you know what I mean? What are they like as an individual off the pitch? How do they conduct themselves? You know, like you said, what's their attitude like in training? He was known to be absolutely meticulous for that. And obviously with the certain managers we've had in the last few years, I can't imagine many of those would be as meticulous as what Moyes was.
No, and coming, speaking from being in dressing rooms where you've had players that do moan and, you know, might not be happy with the management style or the way the team plays, you know, the saying of one bad apple can ruin a bag. That is certainly the case in sport. You know, you get one person that says it to one person and go, you know, oh, I'm not sure about this, then it's in his head, and then he goes and tells two people, oh, we're not sure, and then all of a sudden it spreads through the team and things and now certainly at Notts, that's one of our big things about bringing new players in, is making sure that if we have problems we air them straight away, because as soon as players start going behind backs and talking in privately, and that's when you start to get like fractions in the team. You know, people know these conversations going off, but it just brings in that extra bit of stress and extra bit of I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but is it just is not helpful. What you want to do is you want to focus on the team, you want to focus on your game plan, you don't want to be focusing on whether you think that player is going to work hard for you or whether that player is going to give his all. That should just be a given. And I think, unfortunately, from what I can see, you know, I don't think you can pick 11 players and be 100% sure that they're all going to give their all and leave blood, sweat and tears on the pitch, which is all you ask for as a fan, in my opinion.
I think the disappointing thing yesterday as well, I mean, you're right in what you're saying again about, you know, having this Everton DNA. Well, players, I mean, Big Dunk was questioned, wasn't he, in the press conference about, you know, players understanding what it means to play for Everton and whether they did. And he said, well, they do now, suggesting that he's pulled a few players aside, or even as a group, and said, you know, listen, you know, pull your finger out, you're not doing enough. This is a massive club. And a lot of players, I think, maybe have taken for granted where they actually are, you know. But the disappointing thing from yesterday for me was that we did probably see more commitments in that first half. You can argue, you know, we the players certainly put it in. I'm not disputing that fact. But the quality just wasn't there yet, you know, yet again. You know, you various moments in the game where, you know, you see Richarlison, Decore going through 2-on-1, Decore stumbling all the way through and gives the ball, and, you know, doesn't find Richarlison with the pass. And, you know, you could go 1-0 up there. Again, you know, it's all about quality and organisation from set pieces. We can see the goal in stoppage time to one of the smallest players on the pitch in the first half, and it had to be Luca Dean who crossed the ball in, of course, and Buendia loops his header over Jordan Pickford over Anzos Townsend, and we find ourselves, instead of going at a half-time with a probably morale-boosting 0-0 first half, not conceding in the game, you know, Villa were probably the better side from a quality point of view, but we were certainly in the game and have players who could do damage in the second half. We find ourselves 1-0 down in stoppage time. We go in at half-time, yet again behind, with another uphill task to try and get back in the game. But you watch that lead, don't you, and you think, you know, we're talking about the basics of the game for me yet again. And, you know, you said, you know, it's a flat corner from Luca Dean, a bit of pace, it's just being flicked on, it could go anywhere, couldn't it? He's caught it pretty well. But we just don't seem to learn our lesson, you know, and that's a disappointing thing, isn't it? The fact that time and time again, we're conceding similar goals or goals from set pieces. Players aren't doing what they should be doing. And for me, it shows, I don't know what you think, Lee, but it shows for me a bit of a weak mentality, if I'm being perfectly honest, because every single time we get a set piece now, those players, I think, freeze. And those players think, I'm gone, we could concede here. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the timing of it, in all fairness, it that when it gets to that stage of the game, it's concentration, isn't it? it's just concentration in that stage of the game. You know, if you look how it came about, I think we were on the attack. We lost the ball. They were breaking at us. Decore unluckily got megged on the halfway line. Gomez found himself wrong side. He had to bring the guy down, got a booking, obviously. Led to a free kick. That free kick then should have been cleared by Calvert-Lewin, and he misheaded it straight into the danger zone, didn't he? And it was Coutinho that had the sort of a snap header. Possibly was going over, possibly not, we don't know, but Pickford tips it over. Now, in reality there, the clock's now up now. It's now on 47. So you think, right, you know, either he blows now or he lets him have the corner, he lets him have the corner. So you just need someone, you know, ideally Mina, the captain or whoever, or Pickford, just to say, right, lad, switch on here, win the first header, just win the first header, get it clear, it's half time. And if you look at the lads made that little dart last minute, and to be honest, I don't think it was an incredibly good corner. I think he's, if you look at it, he's in semi-miss hit it. He's caught the ground a little bit, which has caused it to go flat and short. And he's just reacted to it, Buendia, and just flicked it. And like you said, Mike, it could have gone anywhere. You know, you see plenty of those that go straight into the keeper's hands or go miles over the bar on top of the net. And it just evaded Pickford to the point where, if you look at it, he actually got the slightest touch, didn't he? And that slightest touch took it over Townsend's head. He probably, and Townsend's got his arms going, I don't believe it, I would have headed that. So he probably would, you know, it was just, that's the little bit of luck you need sometimes in football. And for me, the game, if you look at it on the whole, almost a game of two halves. They threatened a little bit first half more than us. They probably played the better stuff, like you said, Mike. But ultimately, we were pretty resolute. We looked a bit more solid at the back with Mina there. You know, Dunk clearly wasn't pushing, committing too many players forward. We were letting their centre backs have the ball. You know, he was clearly just dropping off and being tight. And I, you know, I took going in at nil-nil here is a platform. And then I thought to myself, and you know what? It's a tough game, Villa, your first game, isn't it, really? I mean, you'd much rather, I think I said to you, Mike, earlier in the week, I'd much rather us been playing Brighton or someone, where I think we possibly could have steamrolled Brighton because they're a bit weaker. But, you know, Gerrard's Villa now are a lot tougher team, aren't they? A lot tougher nut to crack. And I always knew it was going to be a tough game. You know, they've picked up under him. They've clearly, you know, got that real manager's bounce. You know, they know they've got a good manager there. They've just signed Coutinho. All their fans were bouncing out the ground singing Coutinho songs. It's almost reminiscent of when we got Ancelotti and we signed James, wasn't it? And into that, and that feel-good factor is back running through the club. And, you know, when that happens, things tend to go for you. And, you know, that as I said, for that particular goal, it did go for him. But I just wanted to say with Duncan, and you know, we all love him. What a guy. You know, you heard the story of him putting money behind the bar in the local bars around the ground, you know, so everybody had their first round paid for. You know what I mean? I thought that was a classy touch. Sums up the guy. You know, I was surprised they didn't announce him like they did last time when he played Chelsea. And, you know, he came out the tunnel at the end. And again, classy. It's just Dunkey didn't want to make it about him, did he? He just wanted to come on the pitch. He knew it would be raucous anyway, and it was. And I just felt we had to get that first goal. Me and Pete were talking about that on the way to the ground. If we could get that first goal, I just feel that, you know, we could probably just go on and like we did when we played that Chelsea game, obviously when Richarlison scored that header and it just lifted the crowd and it carried the rest of the team. And, you know, as we know, the team are really short of confidence at the minute, and conceding the first goal in any game when you're short of confidence is going to be an absolute downer. And then to concede it at that time, it just completely, you know, the dressing room's a completely different place, isn't it? Completely different place.
Oh yeah, it's a sucker punch, as I say, going in at half time and, you know, conceding so late. Like you say, it was over the permitted 2 minutes. So again, argument there for why we're going over that particular time. But you know, the players come out second half. I thought we were better. I thought we were the better side second half. It definitely showed an improvement. Again, a lot of nearly moments, I thought. You know, like I said, Anthony Gordon comes on pretty early in the second half and he was our most creative player throughout the whole 90 minutes. The stats showed that. If he wasn't, you know, creating a chance, he was, you know, having a shot himself. He was trying to make things happen. He was direct. He was going at defenders. One player who's coming to him for a bit of stick, Pete, is Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and the best chance of the game really for us comes from an Anthony Gordon cross from the right hand side, you know, pretty low. Calvert-Lewin, you know, obviously goes in, maybe a bit more reactive than instinctive, you could possibly say. Gets ahead, has to pull his leg back, and the ball then goes wide. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin's been in, as I say, for quite a bit of stick across social media. A lot of fans with silly suggestions he's not good enough, and you know, there's got to be an understanding here that he's been out for 4 months, he's rusty as hell. We're throwing him into a side devoid of confidence, and we're saying to him, "Do us a favour, dig it out of a hole here, because we're right in the shit here," and he's got that responsibility to go out there and do that. It's not the right approach, is it, Pete? You know, for fans to get on his back just because we're hurting and we're upset with what's happened at the club at this moment in time.
This is why I don't spend any time on social media, because it's just full of idiots.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, Mike, he's been out of action for months. He's got no game time whatsoever under his belt. You know, look at him at the start of the season. You know, you could make an argument to say that, you know, Rafa was so reliant on him and his goals as part of the way he set us up. And I think if you look back now, you could say Calvert-Lewin probably carried us through some of those games with the important goals that he scored. And, you know, on his day, he can be virtually unplayable against centre-halves. When we do play it long, he's one of the few centre-forwards I think we've had at Everton. You know, you might even say since Lukaku. And Lukaku came under so much stick for struggling to hold the ball up and keep it and play it off and play the right pass. And it's something Calvert-Lewin is just so good at. He's so good normally at timing his jumps. And something I noticed throughout the game was he had a miserable time against Mings and Konsa, but he seemed to be jumping quite early. And I think just this case of, you know, at such a high level in the Premier League, that timing and that confidence and that sort of ease that you get when you get into your game, that takes game time to come. You know, he's probably not fully fit. You know, change of regime, change of tactics as well. And I think he had a big ask. You know, I think probably the way that we set out tactically, we played very little football through midfield. You know, it was from one end to the other almost as soon as we had the ball, and we were so reliant on him to make it stick and hold it up. And I think if he's fit and he's sharper, he probably gets on the end of that Gordon cross. And I think he has a much better game in general, because I think the way we were playing, we were trying to play to his strengths. So, yeah, I don't understand the fan base sometimes. Absolutely daft.
I totally agree with that point, mate. I really do. I'm sure you'll definitely vouch for this, Jake, as well. You know, you play, obviously, you know, first-class cricket and things like that. It does, when you come back like that from an injury, obviously you're on the verge of coming back now yourself, it's gonna take, you know, a good chunk of games to get into your rhythm, doesn't it? It doesn't just come back to you straight away, does it?
No, yeah, 100%. And, you know, that's one thing that our bowling coach talks about a lot, is that when you're not playing well, it's not because you're out of rhythm or things. It's because people just assume it's because you're not trying or things like that. But, you know, sportsmen go in and out of rhythm. You know, your rhythm can go like that and come back like that. It can be one thing can just click into gear. You know, if first off he gets on the end of a cross or something and gets a goal, then the game and his confidence completely changes. But I think just to me that it just looked like the whole squad just doesn't have any confidence in their ability at the minute. They're not playing those, not 50-50 passes that can break lines, passes that can cut open defences where you might see it, you know, we're just not playing those balls. We seem to just keep going side to side, playing it comfortable and then eventually losing it. But I've played in the Notts team that at the minute that I play in, is we had a run of nearly 3 years without winning a game, and
wow.
It was so hard to explain when you're in a dressing room with a team and a squad which is so low of confidence. It takes it takes more than one game to readdress that. What we did is we readdressed everything, like I said earlier that we identified the little fractions when things aren't going well. People talk, people say this, people say that. get rid of all that. And then it can change round that first half. Like I say, if that first half we get a goal, and then it completely changes. Not just it could change the season, but then like you say, we concede that goal late on. We go into half time, and you can guarantee in that dressing room everyone going, oh, here we go again. Rather than like you say, going in at 0-0 and going, actually we've put in a decent performance there. And then, right, let's build on that second half. They've gone in 1-0 down. Everyone's gone, oh, here we go again. Crowd start to get a little bit jittery, going, oh, here we go again. And then it's back to square one again. So, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of rebuilding to get to where I think we as fans want it to get to. But, you know, it's going to take some big decisions and decisions that potentially might not be favorable, that decisions that are going to take time to develop. I don't think you can buy what we're after now. I think you have to build it, and I think that's what the board needs to look at from my point of view.
I think our moment as well, if you cast your mind back at that game early December, was when Gray scored that last minute winner against Arsenal, an in-form Arsenal at the time as well. And, you know, that was, you know, a great way to win a game, an absolute worldie to do it. The crowd's gone nuts. And then that was our, for me, the springboard moment to go into Palace full of confidence. And they went, guess what? We go into Palace and we sit off and we allow them to control the game. And then it's just like, you know, you've gone back to the classic pragmatism that obviously defined Benitez's reign, all about sitting off, not trying to, you know, take control of the game, not trying to be the ones on the front foot. And then, lo and behold, we concede the first goal yet again, and then we're chasing games, and then we're having to rip everything up and try and throw caution to the wind, but you're 2-0 down or something like that. So I just think, you know, that summed his reign up completely for me. But yeah, I just think yesterday, as I said, that first goal was vital. And in hindsight, if you'd all spoke to most fans, we'd have taken a point. You know, cast your mind back to the game. I said to you, Mike, when Spurs came under Conte to our place, you know, that was, you know, a struggling Spurs team. We were the better team that day, and we probably should have got a penalty. You know, we should have got a penalty, in fact, from the foul from Lloris on Richarlison. But Conte celebrated a 0-0 there because he knew he just needed a platform from which to build on. You know, and then obviously they've gone on, and he's still undefeated in the Premier League under his reign, which tells you everything. And they're still not playing exhilarating footy, but they're efficient, and that's what he's got them to be, efficient. You know, he'll probably work on and sign a few players and make them a different team again. But ultimately, that's what he's made them be. And I just think, you know, we all said last week, Mike, you know, Ferguson, maybe give it to him till the summer. You know, if you ask most fans now, you can't just base it on one game. You know, the guy can't turn water into wine, can he? You know what I mean? He's working with a team that's really struggling, as you said there, Jay, in terms of confidence. But I think the 4-4-2 setup, Pete, you've talked about this in the past, about 4-4-2 and things that, you know, it doesn't really have a place so much in the modern game these days as much, does it really? If you look how Villa set up, you know, they set up with three effectively, you know, tough tackling midfielders in McGinn, Douglas Luiz, and the young lad as well. He looks like a real talent, Ramsey. And then effectively, their width was the fullbacks. Luka Dean was the highest player at the pitch several times when he was basically playing left wing. And then they had the two number 10s in Coutinho and Buendia, who were basically sort of inverted, you know, wingers, if you like, stepping inside, picking up spaces in the pocket. The amount of times in that first half where Decore was trying to say to Kenny, which one are you going with? Are you going to Dean or are you going to, you know, and as a result, Dean was, you know, they were targeting Kenny down that side. All their play came down that side. And obviously they threatened a few times, and obviously, you know, from the goalkeeping brigade, Mike, that you are, I mean, that save from Pickford was, I mean, I still can't believe he saved it, to be honest. I'm just devastated. It was offside for him. You know what I mean?
He was gutted, wasn't he? You saw, yeah. You know, when he got offside, he was absolutely distraught because it won't go down as a save at all, really, you know. But listen, Jordan Pickford, for me, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but he's been terrific, I think, for the last 18 months. And he's just one player who, you know, I think he probably feels it more than most. You know, he's been there with Sunderland. Look what happened to them. Look where they still are, you know. And we've got to be very, very, very careful. You know, defeat again yesterday puts us right in the mire. We really are in a perilous position. But, you know, that save, I thought he played well all game. That was a very, very good save, of course. But Pickford's been more than reliable. Man, yeah, it's sure. I'm sick and tired of discussing defeat, I'll be honest with you. I'm sick and tired of not having anything positive to speak about. You know what I was like yesterday when we were speaking after the game? That's probably the lowest I've been for a good while, even on, you know, under Benitez and losing. You know, I always go back to that Watford game because it was absolutely horrific. But yesterday, I think when you go into that game, I expected more of a reaction. I think the fact that one manager's gone, you know, cult heroes now in place for at least a shorter term. I probably expected more, to be honest with you. Maybe we can't give any more. Maybe we haven't got the quality to give any more. But we've won games this season and looked half decent in some of those games that we've won. So for me, I think we should have done better yesterday, and that's why I'm so disappointed. Says to the fella next to me, I even said when we got that corner in the 96th minute, Anthony Gordon went over to take it, and I said, I will guarantee you right now, he will hit the ball out of play and it will come back in. I said, I will guarantee you. And what happened, you could just see, you could get the feeling that when we were there yesterday, it wasn't going to be our day, and that's why I think it was so much more different than what we saw when Big Dunk was there, obviously for that Chelsea game, United, Arsenal, Leicester in the cup. It feels different, and I think a lot of that's to do with the negativity surrounding the club as a whole. I think that maybe the players are feeling that as well. I'm sure Big Dunk feels the pressure, of course. And we've got to do something drastic to turn things around. But one thing that I do want to speak about is what's happening at the club at the moment. Obviously, another fan protest yesterday. Words were had with Bill Kenwright outside the ground as well. So we're just going to take a short break and speak about that in about 30 seconds. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where, like I said before the break, you know, it's negativity is surrounding the club at this moment in time, whether it be the on-field performances, the lack of a manager, the lack of direction. But a lot of it at this moment in time, since the removal of Rafael Benitez, is centred towards the board, the ongoing issues that we've got there. We did get some kind of communication, if you like, from Farhan Mishiri on Friday, wasn't it, in the form of an open letter. It actually arrived in my junk mail, believe it or not, which is quite apt, but we won't go into that. Now, that won him maybe a little bit of favour on Friday, but, you know, before kickoff yesterday, we knew there was going to be a sit-in, which has been organised, you know, a little while ago. And that was always going to happen. You then see pictures emerge of a certain individual who appears to be Farhad Mishiri's right-hand man in Keir Rabchin. He was there. And I don't think that went down particularly well. We've said this time and again. We put out on social media a few days ago. He seems to be Everton's director of football. In all but name, which is alarming to say the least. But he was there yesterday, which obviously got people's backs up. We also see what happened post match, where Bill Kenwright appears from the obviously director's box. He's gone back inside. He's then come out into the streets, and there's altercations with a number of Everton fans post match. And it all seemed very, very sort of dramatic and theatrical for me, to be perfectly honest. I don't buy into the fact that he was just happened to walk out and then fans happened to sort of see him. I think he knew exactly what he was doing there, to be perfectly honest. But there's so much negativity, isn't there, Pete? And we the protests, you know, week in, week out, the banners, it's hitting the mainstream sports media, which is the idea. I back any fan to make any kind of statements and stance. I think what's going on at Everton is absolutely appalling. I think it's upsetting to see where we are. And, you know, we see it, as I say, we're seeing it more and more. And, you know, take out of the equation the reasons for it in a way, just talking emotionally. How does it make you feel to be seeing this all the time? And You know, does it get you the way that it's getting to me?
It does, because it's complicated, isn't it? You can really understand why fans are so angry, because, you know, look, somebody goes to the game every week, and follows every single Everton match. You know, I'd say there's nobody more frustrated than I am. You know, we lose it ruins my week, never mind my weekend. You know, we don't play well, and I'm picking over misplaced passes, and, you know, people that didn't run enough, and, you know, for the shirt. And I really get why fans are furious, and I think there's almost an irony with Everton. You know, we overachieved for years on minimal resources, you know, being shrewd and tough and, you know, having grit. And then we come into a decent amount of money and just completely squander it to the point where we've made a rod for our own back, and now we can't spend to fix it. And we've got, you know, a lot of assets, if you will, in players that we can't get rid of. So I get why the fans are so furious. But I think, like you say, Mike, the problem is there's a lot of misplaced anger. And I think when we spoke about this on the pod before, something that's come up is we need better communication from the club, because, you know, to defend some of these fans, how do they know who to be angry with? And I think this is why it's such a mess. Some people are furious with Mashiri. Some people are furious with Kenwright. You know, Brands was something of a fall guy, wasn't he? You know, again, seemed to really divide fans. So I get why people are furious, but I think all it does is it just heaps more pressure and misery on the players that have got to go out and get a result. Well, and it's hard to see what the answer is, really. And I think it just, I know we're going to come on to it in a minute, but for me, it just puts so much, it loads so much pressure on this next appointment. And it really raises your anxiety, because you look at the shortlist and it's just a shortlist of risks. I'm, you know, to be fair to the board, I wouldn't want their job now of picking this next manager, because I don't think this is a strong pick. I think it's just such a calculated risk. And I think there's a risk of the Everton job becoming a bit of a poison chalice. And we really need to, as a club and as a fan base, find a way of coming together and saying, you know, look, this is the direction we're going to go in. And we're all signed up to it, from, you know, the chairman, everybody involved in the club at a leadership level, to the manager and the players. Because if we don't, well, we're only going one way. And I think we're, again, flirting with relegation. And I think there's only so many times we're going to get away with that before we really get sucked into it. And then, you know, who knows where that could lead us. So it's so complex. And I don't really know what the solution is, but I'm starting to become fearful for the future. And I've not felt like that as an Evertonian really now for a long time.
I think the alarming thing is, you're right in what you said there, Peter, think in terms of, it can get muddled, can't it? Now, the 27-year campaign have been very, very sort of direct in what they're asking, you know, mainly centered around communication. I think, you know, Bill Kenwright, people want him to be removed, to be honest with you. Somewhat machine to be removed, but I think the starting point for some is Kenwright. A lot of the blame is centered around him, feeling he's to blame for the club stagnating over the years. But I think your point there about it getting muddled and, you know, impacting players. I mean, we saw John Joe Kenny, who actually, he got showered, he came out of the tunnel and he walked over to the fans who were in the Gladys Street after the game yesterday. And somebody had said that, he said, you know, you've got to back the players. And, you know, they said in no uncertain terms, listen, this is not a process towards the players. This is a process towards the board, towards Mashiri, you know, the lack of direction, the stagnation, the lack of communication, all this. I think the concern is, I mean, players for me are probably, well, they are responsible for knowing what's going on and understanding fans. I think personally, if I worked at the club, if I was a footballer, I'd like to think that I would know how fans were feeling. I think a lot of players maybe who, you know, some players probably like to just shut themselves off. So when they play on a Saturday or play at the weekend, they go to training, and then you like to then just sort of go into their own bubble with their family, with their friends, and not even think about it. So maybe that's why maybe some players are thinking, well, I'm going by having a go at us. It's, you know, we're we're trying our best, the manager's gone, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think players have got to educate themselves personally to know what is happening within the fan base. That's my personal opinion. But I think when you're seeing characters like this Keyes Arapchin who's floating around, you know, all the time, he seems to be responsible for certain things that are happening at the club. He's got an awful track record. You know, he's certainly not liked within the business by those, you know, from the outside looking in. He's been invited, obviously, to the club yesterday, getting wined and dined, and that's not obviously sitting well with certain people. I think that when you start seeing those kind of characters sneaking into the running of the club, I think, you know, the alarm bells, you know, really, really do start ringing. And those who did the sit-in yesterday, I've got great admiration for anyone who takes action. You know, it was peaceful. There was no issues with that. They're just trying to get the message across. As I say, the Bill Kenwright situation, looking at that, it seems a little bit, not from the fans' perspective, but from his perspective for me. And I don't sit here and say I'm his biggest critic. I haven't been over the years. But I think it was made very, very theatrical. And we've been here before. We've been in a situation before where this has happened and he's been approached outside the ground. And I just think it was a little bit maybe orchestrated on his behalf, to be honest. But when you're watching that, Jake, and you see, obviously, I'm not sure if you've seen what happened with Bill Kenwright, you see the fans' anger. You know, you're a fan yourself. Are you on board with that? Do you get it? Do you find yourself feeling really, really frustrated and fearful for the future because of what has gone before and under this regime's watch?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because I don't know all the ins and outs, and I don't think anybody really does. And I think that's one of the main problems, isn't it? The fact that I think around the football club, there's far too many grey areas of, you know, so getting people in here, people there. I don't think they have like a set philosophy, a set thing about what everybody works around. I think, like I said earlier, I think fans want to see a club that's giving everything, players giving everything. But I think when there's unsettled bits in the board, you don't know what's being communicated from the board to the players. If you're a player and don't know what's happening in the board, that can unsettle you tremendously as a player, because that means your future's unsettled as well. You know, you don't know contract-wise, you don't know which way the club's going to go. You know, foreign players saying that this is the way we want to play and this is the way the football want to play, but then obviously sack the manager, you sack Brands goes, and then it's completely different. So to be a player and not know sort of month to month, whatever it is, week to week, the style of football or things that you want to play, I think it just seems to me a massive, just far too much grey area. I think it needs stripping down back to the bare bones and say, look, this is Everton Football Club's philosophy. This is how we want to play. These are the players that we want to attract to the club who want to play like this, rather than, I think, like I said, when we got the money, we're spending not players that we're going to, you know, make the team necessarily play they want to play. We bought a player in and then tried to fit a formation around him. We end up with four or five players in a side where you're trying to fit square pegs into round holes. And it's frustrating. And I get everyone's frustration around it. And I think that's just because you can't see a direction in which the club are going. And that, for me, is the bottom line of it. You want to see a direction in which everybody's working towards, and I can't. That's the biggest frustration to me.
The one word there, you've just summed it up there. It's a complete mess, isn't it? It's an absolute mess. It's all over the show. You know, even now, you know, my fear was that if Ferguson did lose the game, and we did, you know, what should have been a draw, really, but we lost it 1-0. The fear was the board are then going to react and make a reactionary appointment rather than doing their due diligence and thinking, look, we've got to find the right guy for the job, rather than just suddenly panicking now and throwing someone in there. And like Pete just said there, the names don't jump off the sheet. You think, yeah, they're all risks. You know, Lampard is a risk. He's a novice as a manager still. You know, Rooney's, you know, even more of a novice as a manager. You know what I mean? Obviously, Rooney's, you know, he's an Evertonian. We all know that. You know, he's in some quarters, obviously, he's thought of as a, I wouldn't say he's a legend, because obviously he's a legend more at United probably than our club. But obviously, if Rooney came, he would get the fans behind him because of who he is. He could potentially attract certain players. But again, you know, the job he's got at Derby, and we said this last week, it carries no pressure for him. You know, he's an absolute winner if they stay up. But if they go down, he's got, you know, there's a perfectly valid excuse, because they're more of a mess than we are in terms of where they are as a club. Do you know what I mean? So he's in a win-win scenario almost. And I just think, you know, if I'm trying to think of names now, if we could attract to the club, who would really think if he came in, he'd completely sort it. And the only names that instantly come to mind are people, you know, like a Conte type, like a Simeone or something like that, who just think, you know what? If Simeone rocked up and we gave him whatever he wanted at the club and we backed him, you know, the fans would react to someone like that, because he wouldn't stand for anything. And he's theatrical, you know what I mean? And he's the sort of guy that would get, you know, fans would absolutely adore him because of who he is and how he carries himself. I'm not saying we can get him, by the way, obviously, you know, certainly not mid-season. But they're the types of names that would get me off my seat and think, you know what, if he came in, then, you know, he could really fix it. But beyond all that, you've just alluded to it there, we need a director of football that comes above that, who recruits a manager. He should be the one recruiting the manager to play in a certain style, like you've just said there, Jay. And then we recruit players to play in that style of play. And that's how it should be. I mean, you say it out loud and you think, well, that's quite simple. How the hell have we managed to cock it up so badly? You know what I mean? And that's why Brands really, you know, he was one of the most vocal in terms of wanting Marco Silva to stay. Because he knew that Silva was on board with what he wanted to do. He wanted to go out and sign players of a certain age to play in a certain way. And then basically, look, we can, if these players succeed at our club, we succeed, then we sell them on for a profit, we reinvest, and we start the process again. You know what I mean? And knew Silva was on board with that. And then obviously since then, we've had a plethora of different managers who want to come in and sign their own players, not to the philosophy of what Brands, you know, was trying to achieve. From what we've been told, Brands never wanted Benitez. He hated him, obviously. Brands never wanted Carlo, although clearly there was a bit of a relationship there because Carlo gets on with everyone because he's a great guy. And then and then on the back of all that, Mashiri's going, I've got my best mate Kiri. I'll pay 28 million for Iwobi, even though he doesn't run it by anyone. Just goes and signs him. Do you know what I mean? And so it's just a complete, absolute show, really, when you think about it. And I just think, you know, and on top of all that, we've now brought in the worst possible manager, who's a hero across the park, who had us playing, you know, football that's 20 years out of date. And then on top of all that, he's got rid of our most creative players. If you look at the stats, Mike, you and I were talking about this, you know, our three most creative players last season by a distance were Luka Dean, James Rodriguez and Gylfi Sigurdsson. Now, obviously, for different reasons, some of them have left, but two of them are on the manager. You know what I mean? Two of them are on our ex-manager. And as a result now, we end up with a game yesterday where we have 15 shots in the second half, one on target, because we've got no creativity in that team whatsoever. We're devoid of creativity. And that's the mess we've been left in. So you look at us on paper and think, oh, we're too good to go down there. Look at that team. And go, we're not too good to go down, are we? We're far from it, because how many of those players in that team now are going to scrap between now and the end of the season? Are going to really dig themselves in and go, we're going to have to fight to get probably five or six wins to stay up. I can't see there's many in that team that'll do that.
Yeah, character is a big thing for me. And I was out before, and I was thinking to myself, you know, thinking back on previous times when we've been close to the drop. Look at the players in those sides, and you know, some of those players had character. You know, you could rely on them. You know, well, no, we weren't in the bottom part or the bottom few places in the table by coincidence, but some of those players, you think, yeah, they've got the heart for the battle. Look at that side that we've got now, and I think to myself, who would I want to pull me out of the shit there? Who do I think could really, you know, would wear the heart on the sleeve, would give everything that they possibly could, and they can pull us out of it? And there's not many. And whether that's just modern football, that's a makeup of a modern footballer, I don't know. But there's not many players there that you think, you know what, they would graft. They would graft for you. Richarlison, yes. Anthony Coleman. Gordon, yes. Coleman, of course.
Alan Wood.
And Jordan Pickford, probably.
Yeah.
You know? But you struggle. You struggle then, don't you, to sort of think, well, who else would really put it on the line for this football club? And that's the concern. Throw into the mix as well, talking about obviously this campaign which is going on and the fans protest. We're going into the last week of the transfer window. We were sitting on 19 points in 16th place in the table. We've got no manager, we've got no director of football, and we've got no head of recruitment at this moment in time. That's where we are. Now, that for me, I know obviously there's been changes recently, but that's unforgivable. That is unforgivable to be in that position when we're in the trouble that we're in. To not at least have, like you said, Lee, director of football in place. So you can start to build a philosophy. You can start to build that backroom, backbone, if you like. So whoever comes in as manager over the next sort of 5 years, whatever it might be, it won't matter, because as a club, we've got a direction and we've got a philosophy. That's where we should be. That has got to be addressed first. It won't be addressed first. They will bring a manager in next week, no doubt, to try and get one or two signings over the line and to work with the side for a week before the Brentford game. And that's where we are. And there's no wonder why there's so much fan unrest and there's, you know, fans are fearful for our future, because we're lacking three major off-field positions here. And we're in the fight of our lives at this moment in time. Make no mistake, this football club can go down. If we go down, we'll be the next Leeds United or Sheffield Wednesday or those kind of sides, because those at the top, Farhad Moshiri is letting these leeches around him stick their oar in, try and get the claws into the football club. They don't care what happens to Everton Football Club. They care about making money. It is that simple. And until he cuts ties with those kinds of people, we are never, ever going to move forward. We're never, ever going to learn our lessons. And that's where we are. As we're speaking now, and we're going to come on to the management, the new manager after the next break. As we're speaking now, Vitor Pereira has come in to 3-1, and apparently he's been spoken to and potentially interviewed to be our next manager. Who's he got ties to? Who has he got ties to? Keir Jackson. So yet again, this man, and I've mentioned him, I can't even say his name properly, but I've mentioned them multiple times today, because it drives me nuts that he seems to be leading the way and or leading the lack of direction this football club is going in on a daily basis. And that for me is frightening stuff.
Isn't Cannavaro on his books as well?
He's got ties. He's got links to him. Yeah, got links to him. Yeah. Now, whether it's just all, you know, stories being made up for betting purposes. But for me, there's no smoke without fire. And we're mentioning names of managers who are linked to this particular individual. You know, it's hard enough as it is at this moment in time, looking for a manager that we think can actually save this football club in the current season. And like Pete said earlier on, the list that we're looking at doesn't inspire you with a great deal of confidence to think, oh yeah, I fancy him to come in and to pull this side out of it. Because, you know, the favourites for the job just don't, for me, inspire that kind of confidence. And we're not going to go out there and get a Simeone. We're not going to go out there, obviously, Conte's gone to Spurs. We're not going to attract that kind of manager anyway. So we've put ourselves in this position through the faults of mistakes that have been made over the last 5-6 years, in my opinion. We were headed in this direction because of mistakes that have been made.
You know what? The more I think about it, the more and more. And Jake, the last time you were on, we had Carlo Ancelotti as our manager. He got 60 points out of this team, didn't he? Okay, it was a random season with no fans, and we obviously, you know, we stuttered a bit towards the end. But give or take, it's pretty much the same squad, give or take, apart from obviously a couple of those creatives I mentioned. And you know, him walking away was just a massive blow. I think not just for us as fans, because You could see the journey he was going on, the noises he was making in terms of, I want to be here when we go to the new stadium. This is the bookend of my career from when I started with Milan. You know, he's making all these noises, you know, and making the right noises. And as fans are getting, almost falling for the romantic side of it, if you like. And then, you know, for him to go and go to Madrid, you start to think, obviously, A, it was Madrid that came for him, so he was always going to go. But then you start to think, well, maybe he knew what was going on in the background now. That's all coming to the fore, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I think I said it, didn't I, on the week with Carlo Ancelotti. He'd obviously spoken to Duncan Ferguson this week and passed on his best wishes, which I think is the mark of the man. You know, it's who he is. I know he was big fans of Duncan Ferguson, and by all accounts wanted to take him to Real Madrid with him. So, yeah, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti, at the time, we were massively upset. It hurt when he went because we thought, you know, we've got someone who gets the club, who's a world-class manager. He walked away, and I think now we know the reasons why. You know, he knew what was going on, money-wise, probably especially, and at boardroom level, didn't like it. And when he got the opportunity to speak to Real Madrid, he went. And who can blame him, to be perfectly honest?
Think about it as well, though, from a... I'd be interested to get your view on it as well, Jake, from your background as well. But think about it from, you know, how he did it, how much that have affected the players as well. Because by all accounts, he was well-loved by the players, wasn't he? And for him to do it like he did in a split second right at the end of the season, you know, how much that must massively affect the dressing room as well, mustn't it?
Yeah, I think probably more than you'd probably understand. I think having a lot of those players would have looked up to him. And seeing, obviously, he would have not just promised the journey to us as fans, he would have promised the journey to the players as well. You know, the players buy into that, the players buy into his philosophy. And you could, like you said, you could see them working towards something. Then as soon as that goes and gets taken away, you know, you feel like all the work you've done with that manager working towards something has gone. And then, obviously, then the next guy comes in, it's like, they take a completely different view, and it might not suit the way you play. It might not be exactly what you want. And it's a massive disruption, like you guys have alluded to. This next appointment is such a big one because it needs to be somebody that they know is going to be and has the aspirations to take the club forward over a number of years, over 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, whatever it is. The next person that comes in needs to have that. And I'm going to just jump back a little bit to what you said about character. And we've got, our coach, a good friend of the head scout of Sir Alex Ferguson's, and his philosophy is from the very bottom of the club, the under eights, under nines, whatever it is, through to the top, was that I want them to work hard. I want them to, if they get kicked, get back up and keep going. I want players that will run through a brick wall for me. And that was the philosophy of the club from the bottom. He says, I don't want the player that's going to do all the step overs, the quickest players. I want the players that when they get kicked, when they get an elbow to the face, they get straight back up and they get on with it. And that was his philosophy. And you could see through his time at Man United how that transitioned in. And it came to a head. He tells a good story, the scout does, about when Nani came. One of Nani's first games at United was away at Stoke. And I think within the first 5 minutes, he took a big tackle, kicked him to the ground, and he went missing. And apparently Sir Alex Ferguson got him in the dressing room and says, if you ever go missing, once you get kicked again, you'll never play for this football club again. Mm. And then obviously from then on, he went, but it needs a person like that to build a philosophy and build a team and say, this is what we want to take the club forward for many years to come.
Yeah, real strong character needed.
I mean, they're such opposing figures, aren't they, Ancelotti and Benitez? You know, you go from Carlo, who's real arm around the shoulder, building players up, confidence, you know, attacking football. You know, we can do this. Ronaldo described Ancelotti like similar to Sir Alex Ferguson, didn't he? Like a father figure. And then you get Rafa in, who's quite, you know, stereotypically cold, shut off, distant relationship from the players, tactically very negative and cautious. And you think, what must it be like to go from a dressing room where you're encouraged to go out and attack, believe in yourself, express yourself, you know, to a manager who's almost, I think, telling the players to play within themselves. And for me, it was only a matter of time before the wheels fell off and this unfolded, because it was quite clear the players weren't getting behind that philosophy and vision. And like Lee said before, you have results like the Arsenal game, or, you know, the away draw at Chelsea, and then a following game like Brighton or Palace, where he persists with the same philosophy, and you just think, no, you know, for someone that's supposed to get the club, you don't get it. And absolutely, yeah, I couldn't agree more.
The warning signs were there for me after the Burnley game at home. I think the interview that Andros Townsend did after the game, he scored two unbelievable goals. And they asked him, what did Rafa, because Rafa went up to talk to him after the end of the, on the pitch. And they asked him what he said. And he says, oh, he told me that I did something wrong. Now, imagine being a player, just two unbelievable goals. You've won your side the game, and then you know, if you think yourself as a balloon, you're blowing up, and then he comes and tells you, oh, you were too slow getting back at one point. That's just pinned to the balloon, isn't it? You're just deflated. I think he was just that character that was so negative, deflating. I just couldn't work under a manager like that, where a player did something so good, won your side the game, and then just tell him, no, you did something wrong, rather than saying, mate, that was unbelievable. I think that was... They were the warning signs for me there.
Yeah, I mean, as a player, if you've had a great game, you know you've had a good game, but it also makes you feel 10 feet tall if your manager tells you've had a great game as well. And it goes back to when you're a 100%. Kid. You know, when your dad's watching you on the touchline, you want to impress your dad. We all want to impress our dad, you know, whether you're playing footy, cricket in Yorkshire, whatever. You know what I mean? And your dad, you come off the pitch and your dad tells you were amazing. I mean, how good do you feel? You know, you probably ride on that wave for the next 3 or 4 days, don't you? And that's the same as 100%. You know, as you get older as an adult, it's the same thing. And Benitez was famous for that. You know, Carragher and Gerrard all talk about that, you know, where they've had amazing games, and he was famously cold and never told them they had a great game. And you know, if you're winning games and you're winning trophies, in his case at that time at Liverpool, you can almost get away. If you're not winning stuff, that's why he got dismissed quickly at Real Madrid. That's why he got dismissed, you know, at Inter Milan. That's why he's now been dismissed in 6 months at Everton. You know what I mean? He's famously known for being a really cold manager and not being the best man manager out there. And you know, and if you start losing games and he's like that, it's only a matter of time. And he should have gone weeks ago for me. He should have gone weeks ago. And as I said before, if Duncan could have been in charge at, say, Brighton at home or something like that, where it's a more winnable game, I think we could have steamrolled Brighton, you know, with the greatest respect. And they play nice football, but I think we could have bullied them. Villa stood up to it yesterday, because obviously Gerrard's that type of manager. You know, you only saw, after 2 minutes, you saw McGinn go straight through someone, didn't he? You know what I mean? And they were there, that's them saying, we're gonna fight you today, even if you try and steamroll us.
Yeah. Most definitely. But, you know, we are where we are at this moment in time. Like you said, you know, Benitez is gone. Ferguson's an interim charge. We're hearing new minds' names every day again, still. When I thought he'd whittled it down. But we're going to have a quick chat after this break about where we currently sit with the management situation and what we think is going to happen over the next week or so. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where it's manager talk again. We're still without a permanent manager. Like I said in the last part of the show, Vitor Pereira has come right in. To 7-2 joint favourites as we speak. I don't really want to waste any time on him, because every single time we're in the market for a new manager, he seems to appear, doesn't he? So he's been mentioned over the last, I think, probably 3 or 4 years, and he was on the shortlist. Fingers crossed, it's not the case. The two that we seem to keep on going back to, and we're hearing a lot more about, seem to be Frank Lampard and Wayne Rooney. They're the two that appear to be leading the way. Rooney's has drifted a little bit to 5-1. Lampard is 7-2 joint favourites. Like I've said, you know, don't really inspire me a great deal. Peter, you said earlier on, both are risks. You know, I think the whole list is a risk, to be perfectly honest. You know, from Cannavaro, who appeared in the week, and like we just said, Pereira's appeared, Lampard, who, you know, didn't do particularly fantastic at Chelsea. You could argue struggled, as Lee's mentioned in on previous shows, speaking to those senior players and telling senior players that he played with that they weren't playing. You know, we didn't mind you with a backbone, that's for sure. But looking at those two names, please, who are you fancying there out of Lampard and Rooney?
I mean, it feels to me a bit like the devil in the deep blue sea. It's bizarre. I feel like I'm in the twilight zone. You know, if you would have said to me 18 months ago, you know, come January, you're going to be debating whether you want Rooney or Lampard as the next Everton manager, I'd be asking what you've been sniffing. I cannot believe it. They both just feel like such dangerous risks. I mean, Rooney, on the one hand, is the argument that he would understand the club, he'd be able to relate quickly to the fan base. But he was playing with half of those players 3 years ago. And it makes you think, is he going to get the same level of gravitas, respect? You know, look, I know we're not that kind of podcast, but I do think it's relevant. If he's going to come in and be the manager, you have to look at how he's conducted himself professionally. You know, some of he's always in the bloody papers. Do we want that as our manager? I don't think so, personally. If you think about what you want from an Everton manager, I think that's a major risk. You know, his personal life is in the rags every 5 minutes, and I just don't think that would be good for the club. I think he's done an unbelievable job at Derby. Unbelievable. They would be just off the playoffs, even after getting beat at the weekend, if you take away the points deduction. And considering they struggled to put a squad together, I mean, that you know, it's amazing, but it's a world away from the Everton job. It's miles away. So my heart maybe says out the two, Rooney, but I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think my head would probably go more toward Lampard. I think he did a really, really good job at Derby. I thought he got them playing brilliant football. I thought he was unlucky at Chelsea for various different reasons. I think he had to come in and handle a really, really difficult dressing room, as you know, similar to what Rooney would be with us. He came into his boyhood club really after not being that far apart from it as a player, and having to manage players who were actually in the same squad as him at some point. But I thought he got them playing very, very good football. I thought he had a great philosophy, and I thought he got some good scalps. You know, he got to a cup final, didn't he? I know they lost to Arsenal. He got the better of Mourinho twice, you know, which is no mean feat. And I think he would get us playing good football. I think that the problem is the position we're in the table. I think that's why it's a major risk. I think if we were lying, you know, sixth and he came in, I might fancy our chances, and I'd be quite looking forward to what kind of football we play. But 16th in the table, it just, it feels like it's either going to be a fairy tale or a nightmare. It's just, it's just bizarre. I just don't know what to say.
The Lampard one is really difficult for me, because I think in that first season as Chelsea, mind you, he got almost a free ride because of the transfer ban. That he was never going to lose out, was he? It was always a case of, well, he couldn't bring anyone in. So if he gets, you know, European football, what you know, cup final or whatever, he's done well there. So I think he was probably operating in a lot more of a relaxed environment with less expectation, if you can say that, as being Chelsea manager. Like you say, Pete, coming into Everton in 16th position with all the boardroom unrest as well. You know, the fans are certainly restless. The players are devoid of confidence. Can you really sort that side out and, you know, get us playing half decent football? But more importantly, never mind the brand of football, let's win some games of football. That'll be a bloody start. Even if we win one, goes off someone's backside and goes in, and we win 1-0, we'll take whatever we can. We need points, and it's as simple as that. The Wayne Rooney one, that point, Pete, about the media, never even really give it a second thought, but that's another real, real valid point, isn't it? You know, he's, even up until a few months ago, he's still an A-list football related individual, isn't he, Wayne Rooney? He was, you know, probably the best player of his generation, you know, certainly the most talented. You know, I've never seen a 16, 17 year old player like her in my life. I thought he was unbelievable, you know. And even now, his name alone is massive in this country, massive in the world of football. You know, like you say, personal life gets played out in the media. Do we want that? You know, I know obviously a lot of Premier League footballers and Premier League managers, they're so well known that these things happen and they will be reported on. But I think with Wayne Rooney, they go looking for it with him as well. And I think he's quite obliging to give them headlines, if I'm being perfectly honest. So that's such an important thing to think about, whether that's going to be a positive thing for the club as well. I just don't know. I just don't know what direction they're going to take. The board, I've got a clue what direction they're going to take, unless they get told by Mashiri's mate, by all accounts. But Jake, what are your thoughts on these two names? They seem to be the ones who were fancied. Lampard apparently has been interviewed already and is due to be back in next week for his second interview. Wayne Rooney is due in for his first interview next week. I don't know why they have so many bloody interviews. Just, you know, just get in there and get your PowerPoint presentation on the go and off we go. But what are your thoughts on those two names?
Well, whenever I speak to any other Everton fans, listen to you guys here, we all sound like girls that keep getting cheated on. We don't want to commit to anybody else, do we? It's a bit like, I'm not quite sure. We're looking into these minute details about them and, you know, would this work, would that work? But in hindsight, can it get much worse? I know obviously relegation's there, but like, I think looking at both of them, they've both got unbelievable football brains. I think that looking at the careers they had, they're both obviously very early on in their managerial careers. We don't know what we're going to really get from them in terms of coming into a high pressure job. I think you probably get it a bit more from Rooney than Lampard, but I think we just need to, whoever comes in, trust them, back them, and hope that, you know, both of them will have good contacts as well to get players in. And I think Rooney, obviously more than Lampard, understands what we as fans want and what we as fans want to see and the style of football that we want to see. But yeah, I think as I alluded to earlier, I think whoever we get in, it has to be done with a philosophy and understanding that they want the job for a long time. We're not just a stepping stone for them to go on to a bigger job or anything like that. I think whoever comes in, it needs to be right. We're setting big foundations here. We're moving to a new stadium. You know, we're a big club. We're a very big club and we can do things. We need people to come in who understand that and want to build a team that in 6, 7 years, 8 years time, whatever it is in the Champions League, is challenging at the top of the table.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that direction is the key, isn't it? You know, we've got to have the direction. We've said about it already in the previous part of the show that we don't know what direction we're on. We're not hearing enough from the board, from Farhad Mashiri as to what direction is going to be set. I think that hinges on the director of football coming in, hinges on the manager buying into that. Ideally, we want to bring a manager in who, you know, is forward thinking, will be given the time. But like you say, it's such a high pressure situation that we find ourselves in. If we're sitting sort of mid table, you know, 8th, 9th, whatever it might be, then that same pressure is not there. And if they'll be given that time to build, I think we're in such a precarious position that we're still, whoever comes in, we're still running the risk of it all goes wrong. We find ourselves getting relegated and they're removed from their job in the summer as well, you know, because that's where we find ourselves. So setting a direction is really, really important. I think the difficult part is at the moment in terms of long-term direction is where we are in the league. And that's what really, really frightens me, you know. But Lee, what were you going to say then about Lampard and Rooney?
No, I think you've both. I think you've all sort of summed up really well. I think, you know, both of them are risks because of where they are in their managerial careers. I think Lampard's obviously had a bit more experience. Yeah, like Pete said, he did a half-decent job at Derby. I read an article the other day, actually, about his time at Derby. And he overperformed massively, according to the stats. Now, if we had Piv on here, he'd be talking about this in a much bigger way than me. But they massively overperformed in terms of their XG, in terms of goals scored, and then also in terms of their goal expected goals conceded as well. Now, as Piv would say, normally over a season, that balances itself out. Eventually, you might have a spurt where you're scoring more than you should be, and then obviously eventually it levels itself out over the season. But if you do a deep dive into it, they massively exceeded in all areas. You know, if he was to manage them again for another season, they'd probably level off and, you know, maybe finish a little bit worse off. But ultimately did an okay job, didn't quite get the promotion. I felt Chelsea used him, if I'm honest, used him as a player because they obviously were in that situation where they couldn't spend because of the transfer ban. And, you know, they knew they could ask Frank and he would never say no. I think he alluded that to himself when he's been interviewed since, that, you know, they asked me and I was never going to say no, you know, because of what he thinks about the club and the career he had there. And, you know, like you said, Mike, first season he did all right. You know, he got a tune out of them, and then obviously the wheels came off, and they clearly had a fantastic squad because, you know, you have to see what Tuchel did with them in that, you know, very short space of time, including winning the Champions League. So there was obviously flaws in his management there, and hence the reason why they ended up getting rid of him. But if you were to ask me over the two, there's pros and cons for both. But, you know, if it comes down to those two, I'd probably sway a little bit towards Lampard, if I'm honest, purely because of that little bit more of experience. And, you know, he has got that bit of an aura about him. Maybe not to the same level as a Gerrard, maybe. You know, that Gerrard's got that sort of arrogance. I don't think Lampard has quite that same that. But I think if Frank could get to grips with the team, I think the players would respect him straight away. And I think if he could get us playing, you know, and recruit players to play a certain way, I think he could get a tune. But, you know, right now we just need to find results, don't we? So, you know, by hook or by crook, we need to find results, whether it's 1-0s and we're hard to beat or whatever. We need to just get a few results over the line. When I think of the games we've got upcoming, you know, we've got Newcastle away, we've got Watford away. You know, they're going to be really tough games, aren't they? Burnley away. You know what I mean? They're going to be games where we're going to have to roll your sleeves up and fight for the right to get a result before you even start playing footy. And, you know, and that just worries me a little bit. Those games are going to be tough. Those games are going to be really tough. We're going to have to stand up and be counted in those games. And, you know, like I said before, we'd much rather do it and get a director of football and go down that route. And that's what we were talking about last week, maybe giving it Dunk until the end of the season. But I think, you know, he's pretty much ruled himself out of that. Which I respect his honesty, in all fairness. I think he knows himself he needs to get some, you know, some more experience under his belt. So out of the two, I would probably sway towards Lampard a little bit. And yeah, I think that would be my opinion.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to actually ask, really, isn't it? And actually come to a conclusion on, because I just don't know, personally, just don't know who we're going to bring in. As I say, the other two get mentioned. The actual amount of people to actually pick from, there's not many, is there? You know, halfway through a season, you know, we've let our minds go. The big names and the names that you maybe want to sign, it's just aren't there. The funny thing is, Lee, we had spoken, hadn't we, about Mikel Arteta, and we go back in time to when Carlo was brought in. Arsenal brought in Arteta, we brought in Carlo, the Arsenal fans were fuming. Arteta's been given a lot of stick over the last few years, hasn't he, since he came in. He's done, I think, a reasonable job. He's settled them down, they found an identity now. Would you, putting you on the spot a little bit, would you now, if he was available, would you go for Mikel Arteta?
If Arteta was available right now on that shortlist, if he was on, you know, Gary Neville summed up his time brilliantly at Arsenal about a month ago when he were playing us at Goodison. And he said, Mikel, the thing is, Mikel, he personally said, I think he's a good coach. I think he's a strong character. He's worked under the best in Guardiola. At that time when we were playing them at Goodison, he said, the problem is with Arteta at Arsenal is that they lose two games and the fans are all over him, saying they want him sacked. Then they win a few games and all of a sudden he's like, oh, he's a great coach and he's playing young players. So he's never been in the middle, has he? He's either one extreme or the other. They lost to us at Goodison, you know, when they were in reasonable form. And then again, Arsenal fans, you know, TV outside the ground screaming, saying he's useless, he's this, he's that. And then they went and win five games on the bounce after that. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, he's doing a great job. He's doing a great job, Mikel. And he's weeded out some of the, you know, the bad eggs in the thing, like Aubameyang and things like that. And he's brought Saka through and he's brought Smith Rowe through and they're playing a certain brand of football. You know, he's got a very young team and they've signed, you know, they've signed Ben White, who could potentially be a top centre-half. And they've signed a young keeper who's good with his feet. And so, you know, if you were to ask it, even you, Jake, and you, Pete, as well, if Arteta was on that shortlist now, you know, you'd take him, wouldn't you? He'd probably be your first choice.
The thing is, at Arsenal, he's had money and he's had time.
Yeah, but he's also been on the verge of the sack every other week, hasn't he, as well?
He has, but they've also got a better team. And I think at Everton, well, he wouldn't have those three things. I certainly don't think he would get time or grace. I don't think he'd have a very good squad to work with. We've said repeatedly, haven't we? Look at the problems we've got with our team and how disjointed it is, and the makeup of the players. And he wouldn't get money to spend. So not only do I think he wouldn't want to come to us, but I don't necessarily think it would work out.
Yeah, it was more a point of what I was trying to say to Mike was when we got Carlo, you've got the opportunity to sign, you know, to have one of the best managers of his generation. Of course, we were all ecstatic with getting him. But looking back in hindsight now, we've had Carlo's gone, we've had Benitez in, Ferguson's in, and now it's going to be another manager. And then the same time, Arsenal have still got one manager. Do you know what I mean? And they're sticking by, like Jake was saying before, they're sticking by a philosophy. They're trying to think, well, this guy's going to be here for 3, 4, 5 years, hopefully. And they've stuck by him. You know, they've had some tough times where he has been really close to getting sacked. Then he's turned it round. So, you know, looking back at it now, obviously we went for Carlo. Would the wiser option have been thinking more long-term at the time? Would the wiser option have been, rather than going for the big name, would it have been better going for Mikel as a young up-and-coming coach who also, let's be fair, is known more for his time at Everton than he was as a player at Arsenal?
We did that with Marco Silva, didn't we? Look what happened to Marco Silva and look at the job he's doing now. He got very unlucky. Led to him losing his job. I think if he would have had slightly better fortunes, I think Marco Silva would still be our manager. For me, I know we spoke on the podcast last week about what's the best football we've played since the Moyes era. For me, it's Marco Silva. I think he's an outstanding coach and I think he'll be back in a Premier League job before we know it. And I think even if he brings Fulham up, I think another club will come in for him.
I think that's a good point. But I think the big difference between them two is that Mikel, I think he's got an affiliation with the club. B, I think he's got a really strong character, Mikel. I think I think that was Silva's downfall in the end. I think he was, you know, the fans just didn't take to him. And I think he struggled with it. You could see him physically struggle with it. You could see it in his face. I think for Mikel, I think he's a, I don't take any shit, you know what I mean? I don't care who you are type character. And I think maybe that would have seen him through. I mean, look, it's all hypothetics at the end of the day. But I just think in hindsight, would you have been wiser going for someone like that then when they were available rather than going for the glamour?
I'm going to say no, because I don't think Everton have got the infrastructure that Arteta needs. I don't think it would have worked out.
Interesting. Jay, what do you think?
I like what he's done at Arsenal. He's sort of gone down the route of not getting a lot of players in, but identifying areas in which they were weak. And, you know, he's brought in good players, like you say, and he's brought in players that are going to build with the side. He's brought in good young players. And I think, again, I said earlier on in the podcast, I think we don't buy good young players, we buy players with an old reputation, and that's been our downfall for a long time now. But I think his philosophy and the way he wants to run a club is exactly what we need. So in terms of that, I think that is exactly what what we're after.
Yeah, Mike, do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. As you say, it's one of those questions that it's so hard to answer, because at the time when he came in, we were delighted with bringing Carlo in. It was the main manager that we'd wanted. And we thought we got the better end of the deal. I think the point really is that what we want to be doing, and we've all mentioned it today on the show, is we want to have that direction. We want to bring in a younger coach, younger manager, whether it's Lampard or Rooney, and it works, who knows. But we don't want to be in a position where we can bring in that kind of manager and allow them to build a side over 3, 4, 5 years. That is the aim. That's what we should be doing. That's the direction that we should be taking. And Arteta, I think, has done a decent job at Arsenal in difficult circumstances, like you say, because he's always, you know, a defeat away from fan unrest and fans wanting him removed from his job, which is crazy. But that's the world that we live in. Social media heightens these things. I said this to you the other day, where, you know, just because someone's kicking off on social media and it magnifies things doesn't mean that 95% of the fans feel the same. You see what I mean? So that's also a difficult position that we find ourselves in. But I think he's done a really good job. I don't dislike Mikel Arteta. He's learnt from the best in Pep Guardiola. And sometimes I watch Arsenal and look at some of those players that have been brought through, some of the transfers that they brought in as well. And, you know, they really at times are an impressive side. I think Arsenal need to get over that mental hurdle now of becoming, I know they've won the FA Cup historically a lot in recent times, but to get back up challenging for those top four positions and getting back to where they were under Arsene Wenger, that's the Arsenal's challenge. But I think Arteta's done really well. And character-wise, we talk about character, I think he's got the character to operate it at the majority of clubs. I'd probably say at all clubs in the Premier League. You say it doesn't take any kind of shit. With us, if he was available, obviously he's not, it's hypothetical, but if he was available, he's the kind of character that I will bring in to hopefully save us this season.
Let's finish on, he won the FA Cup as well.
Correct.
He's won a trophy with him as well, hasn't he, in a short space of time.
Exactly. So interesting to discuss that, because, you know, was Carlo a sliding doors moment? Maybe, for that kind of situation. You know, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and could you change things? And it's one of those, isn't it? It's important thing to look at that, but nothing but praise for Arteta from me. I think he's done a brilliant job, and I hope whoever we bring in, if it's someone who is a younger, you know, Lampard, Rooney, whoever it might be, hopefully they can do a decent job, keep us up this season, and then be allowed that time to actually build as we move forward to Bramley Moor in 2.5 years' time. But that's us for this week. A long show, but it, like at the moment, we say it every single week, it's a soap opera at Everton. There's never any shortage of news and discussion points. So, Jake, really appreciate you losing your Sunday evening to discuss.
No problem at all.
In our lengthy therapy session.
Nah, I enjoy it as always, mate. But I enjoy speaking to you, lads.
And speedy recovery from the injury. Look forward to seeing you back on the field at the start of the season, hopefully, coming up.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, mate, thanks for coming on, pal. Thanks.
No worries,
man. And that's us for this week. We are done. No game for the Blues next week. Thank God. You might all be saying a little week off. Hopefully we get some news on the manager front as this week goes on. Hopefully we can get another player or two through the door before the transfer window closes. Hopefully, as I say, if news happens, we'll be back at some point next weekend. Fingers crossed. Might be a B-side. We're talking about doing a B-side. We'll see. If not, we'll catch you the following week. Thanks for listening.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.